So I'm going to jump right in. It's good to see everybody today. We've been talking about spiritual disciplines, and we kicked it off with like four inward spiritual disciplines, and then Mark gave us an intermission with a good message, and then Jill started us off with external disciplines with submission and just killed it last week. And so if you haven't heard it, go hear it. Very good. And today I'm going to talk about service, and it's going to be a little different today what I have to share. And I'm going to start out with the scripture in Matthew chapter 20, verse 24 through 28. When the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. But Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many." So I'm going to go back and forth in this question, but I'm actually going to lean into you to find your own answers today. I was taught many years ago that when you teach somebody, it's just as much on the end of the receiver, in fact, more so of what they will receive and not receive from what you have to say. And so I want to ask the question and pose, what is service? What does service mean to you? And I'm going to share some stories out of my own life. And despite the exact situations that I'm talking about and how they could be done differently or taken in one way or another, forget exactly what happened. And I want you to look at all the characters involved and how they approached the situation and what that meant for everybody involved. Cool? Yeah. All right. So, all of these stories have to do with my roofing career. And so the first one, I was re-roofing a house in Edgemont. And we had gone, we tore off the roof, we dried it in, and we were getting a truck to come in, a boom truck, to deliver the shingles. And basically, big truck, a lot of weight. It's got a crane that lifts the pallet up so that you don't have to get any older any faster than you have to. That's the nature of roofing. So I get a call at like 4:30 on the day they stock the roof. I'm not at the job. And the guy says to me, he's like, "Hey, Nick, so first half of the stock went great. Second half, though, I don't know why I did this, but I was just trying to reach this other area. I parked the truck in a place I shouldn't have parked it. I put my stabilizers down in a place I shouldn't have put them down. And basically, I ruined the guy's driveway." And so he put two big holes in it from the stabilizer and then all these other little smaller, minor things. And so anyways, I'm like, "Great, thanks for telling me." He's like, "It's totally my fault. Talk to leadership tomorrow at the company and we'll get you taken care of." So I call up the homeowner, let him know the situation. I meet with him the next morning and he's like, "Nick, I totally understand that, you know, it could be argued that you could just patch these two big holes and the rest is minor enough." He's like, "But honestly, I got this driveway like a month ago. And so I'd really want you to replace it." And so I'm like, "Okay." So he lets me know the asphalt contractor that he had hired to do it a month prior. And so I call him up and figure out what it is. It's about $4,000 to get it done. And so I make some calls. I end up going to my supplier later that day, like midday, early afternoon. And my supplier already in that amount of time has a case, all these printouts, all that stuff, of how they are totally not responsible for what happened. And they're like, "It's the weather, it's this, it's that. We absolutely refuse to pay anything towards that driveway." And so I was like, of course I had my questions. I went back and forth with them for about a week. I got some other people involved who are better with this stuff than I am and all that. We make no progress. They adamantly refuse to take any ownership of the situation, even though their driver admitted fault. So I meet with the homeowner about a week later, and he's like, "Hey, how's it coming?" And I was like, "Well, here's the situation. Here's who I've talked to. Here's what my supplier's saying." And I was like, "I understand that though this isn't my fault, it is my responsibility. You hired me to put a roof on, and I hired these people to give me the shingles. So it is my responsibility to get it taken care of. At this point, I plan to cover your driveway out of my pocket." And he's like, "You shouldn't have to do that." I was like, "I agree," but that's where we leave the conversation. He calls me back in like a couple days, 3 days maybe, and he says to me, "Okay, Nick, so here's what I did. I called up your supplier, I called up the asphalt contractor, and now I'm calling you, and what we're going to do is we're actually going to, we've all agreed to split the cost of the driveway. I'm going to get my new driveway, but between the four of us, the asphalt contractor, the supplier, myself, and you, we're each going to pay $1,000 instead of you fitting the whole bill. It's like, wow, that's really generous. You know you don't have to pay like $1,000 for something that's not your fault. He's like, likewise. But just to honor and support you to keep in integrity, it's worth it to me. What is service? What is service? A year or two later, I go and I do this this really big job up in Shenandoah. It's a big, beautiful, rusty metal standing seam roof. It's about 8,500 square feet vacation home. And beautiful. It got a lot of attention. I was very, very proud of it. And so I finished it in like November. Well, the following spring, I get a call from my client, the contractor, and he says, hey, so the roof that you installed is making some popping noises. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll go check it out. So I go there, and it's not just like a little bit of noise from some metal roof, like it will make you jump inside the house, popping noises. And so I'm like, oh man. So I call up my supplier, a different one than the one before. I call up a supplier out of Denver that had come down, rolled out the roof for me and stuff, and I have a conversation. He's like, yeah, we've never seen a problem like that. I'll check into some things and get back to you. Never gets back to me. I try following up with him. No return calls, no emails, all that stuff. Within a couple of months, the phone number's not even a working number. Fell completely off the face of the map. So contractor has some engineers come down and look at it, and they're like, oh, we think it's this clip in the system, and it's not allowing for proper expansion contraction, and so you need to go through and replace all of these. Well, it's a big project, and I'm like, oh, man. So I file a claim with my liability insurance policy, and my insurance company says, while we see that you use the manufacturer-recommended clip and what was supplied with the panels, because you're the roofing professional and you should have known that that was going to create this problem, we're calling it a workmanship error and we won't cover you. So it's like, oh, okay. So I chased that for a little bit. There's not really a whole lot I can do. I end up, you know, trying that fix. It doesn't work. So then they have my client, the contractor, he has a couple of my competitors come out to look at it. And I'm meeting there with my competitor, who I have good relationship with. In general, I have great relationship with my competitors. And he pulls me aside, and he says, Nick, you did an awesome job on this roof. You can walk away. What's the worst that's going to happen? And I'm sitting here thinking, like, this man can't even take a nap in his own house during the day because of the roof I installed. I didn't say that, but I was like, oh man. So we try some other solutions. We try this, we try that. Everybody wants to keep the roof because it's an awesome roof. And then eventually we come to this point where we replace a major part of it with a different material. Cost me $120,000 to make that right. Not my fault, definitely my responsibility. What is service? What is service? So a couple more years after that, I did this project in Electra Lake. And again, very nice vacation home. Guy was very happy with my work. And he says to me, hey, I've got this problem in my chimney. It's not related to your work, but it's something that I know that you can fix and I trust you to do it. I don't want anybody else to do it. Will you do it? And it's like, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, I have like 58 jobs in progress. And not just like little jobs, like people's $10 million vacation home jobs. And I don't have the crew to do it. I know I should say no. And what do I say? Sure, I'll do it. And so he's like, okay, well, I live in Phoenix. That's my primary residence down there. So why don't you let me know when you're going to do it? I'll drive up from Phoenix and I can let you into the house, whatever you need, we'll get it done. And I was like, great, sounds good. So we pin this date. So I get a call this one Monday, and it happens to be this client. And he says, hey, Nick, I was just wondering what time you're going to get to my house. I had totally forgot about the guy. He drove all the way up from Phoenix. I totally forgot about him. I was honest with him. I said, hey, I'm so sorry, I completely forgot about you. I'd like to say it's something better than that, but it's not. You know, if I was to switch gears now, like, by the time I go get your stuff and all that, it's not really worth me coming over today. Can I just get myself prepared today and I'll come over first thing tomorrow morning? He says, sure, that'll work fine. I have to leave by like 3, but I can at least see you get started. So I do that. The next day, I'm like, I get my guys lined out. I think I had like 11 employees at the time, and get my guys lined out, and I'm getting ready to head up to his project. And I get a call from one of my guys. They have a problem that basically put them at a total standstill. And I'm like, gosh, I can't have one of my crews at a standstill for a whole day. That just costs so much. And so I go, I get it situated, all that stuff. By the time I get done with that, it's like 10:30. I have a long lunch meeting that I was planning either way. So I go straight to that. By the time I get to this guy's house, it's like 2:45. And I get there at 2:45. He was starting to pull out, so he pulls back into his driveway and comes out to talk to me. And of course, I already know I've blown it. And so I'm trying to like lighten things up and all that. And I was like, hey, so-and-so, I bet you about gave up on me. And he said, you know, Nick, actually I did. You know, we shouldn't have gone through with this. It's clear that you had way too much going on, and you should have said no to me when I asked you. And I'm like, okay. He says a few other things, and he's like, you know, to be honest, I actually feel very sorry for you out of compassion, because I've been there when I was younger, and you have no idea how much the choices you're making are affecting yourself and your family, and you probably won't for some time. You're a good guy, Nick, but you're a better roofer. Oh. And of course, I'm just like squirming. I hate the idea of failure at that time. And I'm like, you know what? I understand you're not wrong. But I have all the stuff. I'm here. I think I could get this done if you'll just let me get after it. I know it's supposed to snow tomorrow night, but let me get it. He says to me, you know, I don't think it's a good idea. And I was like, please let me try. He's like, okay, if you think you can do it. So I'm all fired up. I start getting after it. He's left, and I'm like, okay, get set up. I can make this happen. I'll work late. I'll make it work. I find out like 10 minutes in that I left at the shop something I needed just to get started. By the time I go back and get it and come back up, there's no way it's going to happen. And the inevitability of having to tell this guy yet again that I will not deliver on my promise is like sinking in. And I go and I sit at this little rock fireplace overlooking Electra Lake. And like all the weight of what he said, honestly, in love and care, and all of the words that the Lord was speaking to me, and the inevitability and feeling of my failures, like you just let it sit on you, and like you just weep and weep and weep. And so that, of course, I call him and say, there's no way I can do this. I'm sorry. That was worse than the original conversation. You know, I initially had some changes. I lost his contact info. You know, it took me 7 years to actually contact that guy and tell him how grateful I was for what he said to me that day. 7 years. I got it done. But what is service? What do you think of service? You know, the reason that service we're considering a spiritual discipline is because to really truly serve somebody, you have to love them for their benefit, not yours. To really serve somebody, you have to love them for their benefit, not yours. You know, you think about all the reasons of why you would serve somebody, how you could benefit somebody, how you could help somebody, and all of those are founded out of love. And when you think about all the things that keep you from serving, I bet you they're out of fear in some fashion. You're like, I could give more. For me, the fear that comes up are things like, will I be taken advantage of? Will it hurt? Will I be misunderstood? Mistreated? Et cetera, et cetera. Sound familiar? Why do we think like that? You know, it said Jesus came not to be served, but to serve. Do you think that he knew that those things were going to happen to him? You know what? Let me rephrase the question more accurately. Did any of those things keep Jesus from coming to be a servant to us, knowing full well he'd be mistreated, misunderstood? Some people wouldn't even care what he did, though it cost as much as it did. So what makes you want to keep doing that? Comes totally out of here. And that's the work that it does. That's what real service does. It works on your heart. It like whittles away one selfish piece at a time. One piece of pride. One piece of me at a time. Costly. And so all that's left is the character of Christ. And when you sit in character, that's where those choices come out. Gosh, guys, we will sell out character for such a measly price, something that's so valuable to him. Don't believe me? Let me ask you this. If I was to say to all of you here, will you please be in your seats 5 minutes early for church next week? How many of you guys would do that? Some of you would do that. Some of you would be like, I have kids, don't expect anything, right? Now, if I said to you, we will give $1,000 to everyone who is sitting in their seats 5 minutes before church, how many people got more motivated to be to church on time? Honestly. Why? Because now there's something in it for us. Our simple integrity alone was not enough. To serve someone, to love someone for their own benefit, and respect someone for their own benefit was not enough. When you feel the motivation rise because there's something in it for you. The character of Christ is the heart of service. What is service? Why is it so important to you? Why is it so important to those around you? You know, the interesting thing when we consider those situations with that roof that cost me $120,000 to make right, why do we get so stressed out about making the right decisions when we walk into these with the same exact promises that we walk out of them with? When God says he'll provide all of your needs according to his riches in Christ Jesus, when he says that he will finish the work that he started in you, that's, you have that on both sides of the fence. So why do we hesitate to decide if we're going to serve or not? Because it's a discipline to learn to love someone for their own benefit. I guarantee what Jill talked about last week with submission requires this. So why is it so important for you right now? What does that look like for you right now? You know, for some of you guys, it's going to be an answer of like, my kids need this. My parents need this. My friends need this. Gosh, I need this. Is there enough vision and character in your heart to decide it's worth it if it costs me everything? Just like understanding, though it costs all you have, get understanding. Same thing. What's it worth to you? Maybe it's not worth it to you now. Or maybe the line, the threshold of how far you'll go to serve and to put someone else first is lower. Maybe it's really high, but I guarantee you it doesn't matter where it is. It will grow as you practice this. And again, all those things that he whittles away one piece at a time of our pride and our me goes away. One act at a time. I propose that the revelation of how to love someone or something outside of yourself completely depends on this. Hugely depends on this. There's other things too, but this is a major one. Jesus, you set the example of how to serve by becoming even like that of a slave, throwing out your rights to anything you could have had because your character said something else was more important. You had vision to see winning our hearts as the ultimate benefit. Will you teach us to serve past the cost that we've allowed so that we could understand how to love further than we do now? Teach us humility. Show us how to be teachable and inspire us in courage to do just that. We love you, Lord. In your name, amen.
Hey, can we thank Nick?